Welcome. This is Joe Aguirre in studio with Jeff Swearing, Fuzz Rana, and Kenneth Samples in this series covering theistic evolution as it relates to Reasons to Believe's model. On this program, we are addressing young earth creationism, theistic evolution, and old earth creationism. Gentlemen, sometimes we get accused by the young earth creationist crowd of interpreting scripture or misinterpreting scripture from their perspective. In this case, it kind of goes the other way around. In fact, the question might be addressed, aren't you doing to scripture what the young earth creationists accuse us of doing? That is, you're misinterpreting scripture, or am I saying that right? Jeff,
let me take three examples from what we've talked about, even within the context of this program, that I think illustrate an objection I might see.
I'm
not going to be able to specify exactly where it was, but basically, you got a statement somewhere in our program that if theistic evolution is true, you have problems with biblical inerrancy. And young earth creationists have often argued, well, if the universe is billions of years old, then you have problems with biblical inerrancy, or at least scriptural authority. We've talked about the strength of the theistic evolution position, and we say basically the argument they're making is, the science says theistic evolution, and so therefore we have to look at the Bible and see how to fit that. And, we've been charged with saying, well, science says the universe is billions of years old, or the Big Bang is true, so that we got to go look at the Bible and see how to accommodate that.
Right.
So that's kind of there's the argument that we're by taking this position, we're having problems with inerrancy. That's been charged young earth creationists to us, and now we're kind of making that charge against the theistic evolutionist. There's the science says it, therefore the Bible's got to say it too charge. And then with the common design and common descent, one common charge that we make against the old earth creationists is that they're kind of doing a whole bunch of scientific contortions to try and come up with a way to accommodate the data. And I can think of interviews we've had, not so much with Russ Humphreys, but John Hartnett, where they're proposing these different cosmologies where things are young on Earth, but the universe is billions of years old. And one of the arguments we say is, well, okay, you can't really test that, and you're kind of doing mental or scientific gymnastics to do that. But aren't we doing the same thing with this common design, common descent, that the scientific community seems to say, yeah, this is common design or common descent, and we're kind of doing these mental gymnastics to argue that it's common descent. So this is just within the context of this. You could make a case that, we're the new young earth creationists, just kind of being the stoppers to scientific progress, and we just need to go with the flow and heed our own past warnings.
All right. So how does RTB respond to that?
Well, I think I'm really glad that Jeff raised that. And one of the things I like most about Jeff, by the way, is that I think he has a good sense of asking the potential objections that somebody will raise. And I've shared that with Jeff, that I appreciate his kind of intuition there. I think the way that I would respond to that thoughtful objection is to say that I don't mind when young earth creationists raise issues like that. I think that in one sense, it's been good that young earth creationists have raised questions about the old earth model. I actually think it's strengthened the old earth model. I think it's helped us to kind of refine our position. And I share with my young earth creationist brothers concerns about departures from biblical inerrancy. I think all of these are very relevant questions that should be asked. I would simply say to my young earth brothers that I think we have very viable answers to them. For example, it's often said that if you adopt an old earth creationist position, it will deny biblical inerrancy. But let me just give you one powerful point. Within evangelicalism, the vast majority of defenders of biblical inerrancy are old earth creationists. Benjamin Warfield, Norman Geisler, Gleason Archer, Walt Kaiser. These are all men who in one way or another have been associated with old earth creationism. And people say, if you go down that path, you're not going to be able to support biblical authority. But it's interesting to me that some of the preeminent biblical scholars fit into that category. So it doesn't have to be the way the young earthers say it is when it comes to biblical inerrancy.
Just as a follow-up to that, are there prominent theologians arguing for biblical inerrancy that argue for a theistic evolution position?
That's a good question.
I'm not aware of anybody. Of anybody that is, other than to say that they would argue that Genesis 1 is not to be understood historically, but rather is to be understood in the context of Near Eastern creation myths. And in fact, that's what it is indeed. But they would say that that still is an inerrant view in the sense that they are arguing that that is the proper literary genre of Genesis 1 or the first 11 chapters of Genesis 1. Therefore, they're practicing sound biblical interpretation. But then you have to wonder if they are indeed practicing sound biblical interpretation and they're arguing that Genesis 1 is essentially a Near Eastern creation myth, but yet all of Scripture ultimately rests upon those very foundational ideas that are found there, is the rest of Scripture mythological as well. So in other words, they may be practicing sound biblical interpretive methods, but the consequence of doing that in their view then is that the Bible really can't be viewed as inerrant.
Yeah, I would say, Jeff, that I think what this illustrates is that often the old earthers and young earthers have more in common in the way they view the Bible than do the theistic evolutionists. So some of the concerns that the young earthers raise we think are quite valid, whereas with the theistic evolutionists, because their interpretation is so very different, they have a very different orientation.
I mean, our views of human origins are very similar to the young earth views. The places where we do have differences are, I would argue, side arenas, as, for example, when did Adam and Eve live? You know, we would say in the neighborhood of 100,000 years ago, because we are willing to allow for an old earth. But from a young earth perspective, you cannot allow that. But nevertheless, we would still argue both groups that humanity came from an original pair that gave rise to all humanity and that there was a real fall in space and time.
And I think, Jeff, to come back to your question, sometimes young earth creationists say, you know, the calendar day interpretation, six consecutive 24-hour periods, that's kind of a flawless exegetical interpretation in the minds of many young earth creationists. But, you know, this progressive creationist viewpoint, you know, it has all of these difficulties and it's driven by science. But I would turn that around and I would say, not so. There are exegetical challenges and problems with the calendar day interpretation. I mean, in the book of Genesis, the word yom for day can mean something other than six consecutive 24-hour periods. And how do you have light before the sun and the moon is in the sky? Does that mean the previous 3 days were abnormal days? So yeah. There are exegetical questions that can be returned to the calendar day folks. And I think even the biggest challenge, certainly one of the biggest challenges, death before the fall. That's often said, well, you can't have that and hold to Scripture. But I actually think that there are very powerful answers to that. I think Psalm 104 is very powerfully illustrates that you have carnivorous activity long before human beings come on the scene. So I don't mind the criticisms. I think if they're fair-minded, if they're thoughtful. In fact, one thing I do appreciate about the young earth community is they care about the Bible. They care about theological issues. So sometimes I think it is appropriate for us to say, look, here's how we answer those questions. How might the theistic evolutionists wrestle with them? What would be their responses?
But both young earthers and old earthers would agree that Genesis 1 is historical, that God has intervened to bring about his creative purposes. That, again, there was a historical Adam and Eve. And
right.
Both viewpoints are skeptical of the evolutionary paradigm. Now, there are going to be places, again, of disagreement, even in terms of how we would critique evolution. But nevertheless, there's a lot that we would share in common. Whereas, you know, it seems to me like the evolutionary creationists slash theistic evolutionists really are kind of outside the circle, in my opinion.
And, you know, this is a very strong statement, but I can say that I have said this to a number of theistic evolutionists, that there is a side of me that says that the theistic evolutionary interpretation of the Bible seems more like theological liberalism than evangelicalism. Now I could be proven wrong, and maybe theistic evolutionists has answers to all of these objections. And I've thoroughly enjoyed the discussions that I have had with folks on that side of the theological interpretation. Mm-hmm. But I think that these are very important questions, and I don't think it's illegitimate for us to say, just as people have questions for us, we also have questions for those who hold an evolutionary creationist point of view.
What about from the scientific side, where we're kind of, you know, from the biologos, the folks that are saying we're kind of doing these mental, you know, these scientific gymnastics to try and accommodate what seems to be clear evidence for common design. How would you respond to the person who says, how's that any different from you guys critiquing the young Earth creationists that are doing these scientific gymnastics to try and make the Earth look young? The only reason to do that is because of your flawed interpretation of the Bible.
Well, you know, I do not know of anyone who is an astronomer or who is a geologist who, apart from being a young Earth creationist, would have any concerns about the dates that are being provided scientifically for the age of the universe and the age of the Earth. Now, maybe there are people out there, and I'm not aware of it, but to me, you do have not only evidence in favor of that, but you do have also a consensus around those ideas. But now let's move to the origin of life. There is probably nobody who would agree with the statement that we know how life originated through naturalistic mechanistic means. In fact, most people who are involved in that work readily admit that there are some what appear to be significant problems with those models. I know of evolutionary biologists who are not theists who have pointed out, again, what appears to be miraculous aspects of the origin of life model. And so what we're doing when we critique the origin of life is essentially looking at the same problems that these scientists are looking at, and we're deriving theological implications from it, whereas many scientists refuse to go down the path and insist upon looking for naturalistic explanations. Now, when it comes to the idea of common descent, it's interesting to note that 10 years ago, most biologists would argue that the genomes of organisms are simply loaded down with non-functional DNA. I can point to things that I've got on my bookshelf where they talk about the human genome being 95% junk. Mm-hmm. And with the sequencing of the human genome and then the decade afterwards where we've begun to study the genome, we're discovering that a lot of the stuff that we thought was junk actually is involved in function, and that the operation of the genome is far more sophisticated than and more elaborate than anybody would have ever imagined. And so now it's pretty common for people who study the human genome to be suspicious of the idea that the stuff is junk. In fact, they're more oriented towards the idea that this is indeed that these are indeed functional elements. And so, you know, I guess the point being here is that while they would not necessarily argue that this is evidence for design, they clearly are arguing that this is, again, you know, counter to what people had at least previously thought who were entrenched within the evolutionary paradigm. So we're citing conclusions that I think follow from many people in the scientific community. And in fact, a lot of people are expressing surprise that these sequences that were thought to be junk are indeed functional. Mm-hmm. Or when you come to things like convergence, where, again, it looks as if from an evolutionary perspective, evolution would have had to repeat itself over and over again to generate identical outcomes. Well, you go to these papers and you read the commentary associated with the work. Oftentimes people are expressing surprise that this indeed is the case. And so if you can raise questions about, you know, whether or not evolution can reasonably do something like this in terms of generating repeated outcomes, that mechanism that supposedly generated that repeated outcome that doesn't seem to be consistent with the result you're getting is also the same mechanism that presumably generates the features that are understood as common design. So convergence...
Common descent?
Common descent, I'm sorry. And so, you know, convergence is not a separate feature of the biological realm that we bring up but can be dismissed in light of the evidence for common descent. The idea of convergence is deeply intertwined with the idea of common ancestry and common descent. So, you know, I think, in other words, that there are things we can point to scientifically that are consistent with a design interpretation, even though people are not necessarily going down that same path. But I think that the same thing is true with regard to the Big Bang. Most people would probably not dispute that the universe had a beginning, but most people in the scientific community would be reticent to go down the path that we go down, right, namely that there's a mind behind the universe's origin, mm-hmm, but rather they're suggesting other naturalistic mechanisms that may account for the origin of the universe. I don't see any difference.
Right. So, well, I mean, I would just, you know, these are the questions that if I were skeptical of our position that I would ask, but you know, I'm not skeptical or as skeptical of Bobby's position as these questions imply, but one of the things that it seems to me is that I think one of you two made the comment that we're the young Earth and old Earth creationists are far closer in position on biblical issues than the theistic evolutionists. But I think from how we approach the science record, we're far closer to the theistic evolutionists than the young Earth creationists. And I think that is the characteristic of our position, is that we're trying to integrate both. We take the words of the Bible seriously, but we also take the record of nature very seriously. And that is, I think, a distinctive of RTB compared to either one of those two camps.
You know, I think it's worth offering a comment, and I'd be interested in your response and Ken's response to the idea of, is it important that we maintain scientific credibility in order for the gospel to be credible? And I this may sound like a strange statement, given the fact that I work and have worked for a number of years and volunteered for a number of years prior to that for this ministry, which is looking to show the scientific rationality of the Christian faith. But Is scientific credibility what we're after, or are we after being able to show that there is scientific evidence in support of the Christian faith, that there's historical evidence in support of the Christian faith, whether or not that evidence is viewed as being credible or the interpretation of that evidence is viewed as being credible? Because at the end of the day, I would argue that the gospel in itself is intrinsically anti-scientific. And this, again, I'm not saying that I don't believe that the gospel has a rational basis to it or an evidentiary basis to it, but I'm arguing that it is intrinsically anti-scientific.
Foolishness to the Greeks.
Exactly, because I've heard people who are theistic evolutionists make this point that no self-respecting biologist or no respectable biologist would ever agree that there's any evidence other than evidence for common descent. And to take a position other than that is to, you know, is not credible scientifically, and it impugns the Christian faith itself. But yet these same people who are theistic evolutionists or evolutionary creationists would agree, at least as evangelicals, that Jesus died on the cross and rose 3 days later from the dead. No self-respecting, respectable physician, biomedical scientist, or biologist would say that somebody who underwent the beating that Jesus did, who was then nailed to a cross, who had a spear thrust into his side after he appeared to have expired with fluid emanating from that wound, who's then put into a cold, hard grave or tomb and left there for 3 days, would somehow be able to stand up and walk erect. You know, dead people don't come back from the dead. You know, I'm not talking about near-death experiences where you're in a medically controlled situation, you know, where there's people intervening with the best technology, where you just were at the cusp of death and then you come back. I'm talking about somebody who was literally beaten to the verge of death and then who then expired on the cross. And again, who had a wound inflicted that would have been fatal if he was indeed alive, or at least I believe that would be the case. So that's clearly an anti-scientific position. Yet, if you're an evolutionary creationist, you are, when it comes to the gospel, holding on to an anti-scientific view. But yet, when it comes to creation, are saying that we have to hold on to viewpoints that can only be perceived as credible by the scientific community. As somebody who believes that there is a creator, I'm willing to let the evidence direct me in the manner such that I'm open to the notion that God has intervened. And I see plenty of evidence in all the different disciplines to believe that that indeed is the case. Though that may not be viewed as credible, I think it is at least evidentially supported. The evidence is, I think, consistent with that viewpoint. You know, again, the universe has a beginning. That's consistent with the idea that there's a creator, though that is not a credible position scientifically to hold. It's more credible to say that there's a multiverse.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting point, because where I think science enjoys a lot of objectivity is that there are things you can do to go do these experiments, show this data, and you got to come up with something that consistently explains that. But I think the level of or the areas where the scientific disciplines overlap with what the Bible has to describe about creation are sufficiently difficult to nail down a final answer, that there will always be a credible scientific position that doesn't accept the Christian position. You know, I mean, the beginning of the universe, I would argue largely why Big Bang cosmology is so successful is because people were so opposed to the theological implications. It was like, okay, we've got to go test this. There's got to be some way around that. You know, well, let's look at the steady state cosmologies. Let's look at the bouncing cosmologies. Let's look at the, you know, well, maybe it wasn't as homogeneous. You know, so they've looked at all of these different scenarios to try and get around it. And basically you've come to, well, there's kind of no way to get around that, but maybe there's a multiverse. You know, I mean, I don't want to leave the impression that everybody's just solely anti, theologically driven in their motivation. But a lot of the strength we have for these positions are people that are looking for, how do we explain this without appealing to God? So, you know, and as long as there are credible positions that don't involve a God, I think those are going to tend to be the scientifically mainstream positions. And so you are going to be on the scientific fringe at some level to argue a position like RTB. So there is a very real sense I would agree with your premise there.
I really like that question, Fuzz. I think that is a very provocative one. And it's a question that I often think about as I work here at Reasons to Believe. How do I balance the concerns that I have for reason on one hand, but also for my own commitment to Scripture? And what does Paul mean when he says, you know, that it's foolishness to the Greeks? And how do we resolve that tension? I think I would make three points. I would say, one, that in the best of all possible worlds or the best of all possible situations, the book of nature and the book of Scripture are going to be compatible one to another. When we understand both of them correctly, faith and reason, science and the biblical perspective are going to be compatible. And that is a very critical component, I think, in Christianity, and goes all the way back to the apostles. It's represented in the church fathers on forward. The second point, though, that I would make, Fuzz, is that, you know, we all have a worldview. We all have a prism by which we look at the universe, look at humanity, and interpret all of these things. And sometimes that worldview can be reflected not just in from a perspective, but it can be an agenda. And so, I look at those events, but I'm looking through the prism of naturalism or pantheistic monism or maybe Jewish, Christian, or Muslim theism. So it can be tweaked. And then I think finally, I think we do have to talk about what we philosophers do call the noetic effects of the fall, that fallen people are spiritually blinded. And they tend to resist their accountability to God, and they would much prefer to interpret the origin of the universe, the origin of life, the origin of humanity in very secular ways. And so I think it's a muddied issue when we wrestle with that issue. But you're right. There are times where the Apostle Paul says, look, this doesn't make sense to Jews. And the Greeks think it's a bunch of foolishness. But this is the truth of the gospel. And that's a whole other side of the tension I think we have to try to be true to.
And again, it's not saying in any way, shape, or form that there's no scientific basis for the
right.
Christian faith, or there's no historical basis for Jesus's life, death, and resurrection. But rather, it's just simply saying no biologist would ever agree that something like that is reasonable, scientifically reasonable. It's not. It's just plain not.
And I think then, to kind of give an answer to your question, I think we should expect that the Christian worldview and its component elements of cosmology, anthropology, and these other areas are almost always going to be, in one way or another, in tension with the intellectual community. There's going to be areas where there is common agreement. There's also going to be areas of stark contrast. And I think that's what we see.
If you're finished with your comments, I want to ask if you could recommend a resource for the very idea of miracles.
I can. I don't know if I can pull the exact title, but there's a book by some of the Biola professors on miracles.
Thank you very much for listening. On the next podcast, we will talk about the two books theory. Join us then.